it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, folks. Friday, September the 12th. Hope you are having a great morning. We've got a great show lined up for you today. We'll visit with Mike Haas, voice of the New Orleans Saints. Sunday, the San Francisco's 49ers come into the Caesars Superdome, and we are actually catching them with a lot of injuries. So it's going to be interesting. We'll talk to Mike Haas about that as we try to experience our first win of this season. And so we'll speak with Mike Haas. At 12 o'clock, Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. They're 2-0, ranked number 3, the Florida Gators. So we begin with an SEC opponent the third game here, and it'll be the first of our SEC opponents, so it'll be a big night in Death Valley. We'll talk about that as well. Yeah, at 11:30, Kate Swinburne, co-founder and president and CEO of Youth Force NOLA, they're celebrating their 10th anniversary, marking a decade of connecting local public high school students with area companies to pave the way for career readiness. We've talked to them before. They're an incredible organization, and we'll get an update as to what they are doing and where they stand. Emery McClendon is with the National Center for Public Policy Research. We'll talk to him about their thoughts about what's going on in this country relative to this political discourse and political violence. In fact, Emery was in D.C., when the call went out for a moment of silence and prayer for Charlie Kirk, and he'll tell us about that experience. They just wrapped up a press conference in Utah, one that I thought was very well done, releasing the information that I think that they needed to release at this point in time. Obviously, there are a lot of questions still unanswered as it relates to the perpetrator, Tyler Robinson, 22-year-old white male, lives in Washington, Utah, which is down in Washington County's down in the southwest corner of Utah, about 2.5-3 hours from Salt Lake City and the university where Charlie Kirk spoke. They gave us a little bit about the timeline, what they were able to pull together. It's important to note, and Governor Spencer Cox, I thought, did an incredible job in managing this press conference. And he opened up with saying, we got him. 33 hours later, the assets and resources of federal, state, and local government. We've actually talked about this in a different context for the last couple of weeks. This is what can happen. This is what can be accomplished. Over 7,000 tips coming in to the FBI hotline. Kash Patel said they will interview each and every one of those folks to make sure that they're not missing a single tidbit of information. Obviously, there's going to be a strong desire to find out more about Tyler Robinson. As it turns out, family members are the ones that facilitated turning him in. There was a mention that there was a confession made by Tyler Robinson to one of his family members, not to law enforcement. There's a huge difference that there was a confession made to family members that he may have been involved. There's also on the gaming platform Discord messages there, and there's a roommate that has given some information about Tyler articulating some things to him and saying that he needed to retrieve a rifle and his scope, which are unique, from a drop point, which we know that validates what the officers actually found not far from the scene in the woods, where they came across the rifle, the scope, some cartridges. What little we know about the psyche of Tyler Robinson really comes from some conversations recounted with friends and family that he has become more politically active. And he knew that Charlie Kirk was visiting Utah, and he knew that he was going to be presenting. He expressed his dislike for Charlie Kirk to several of friends and family members. And not much more than that, quite frankly, at this point in time. Other than that, what was written on the bullet casings, both the spent casing as well as the unspent casing. On one, it said, "Hate fascists, catch." Another one said, "Oh, Bella Ciao," which is actually a popular Italian World War II anti-fascist song. If you read this, you are gay. LMAO, laughing my ass off, on one of the other cartridges. And there was another cartridge where something was written on it. I couldn't make out exactly what they were saying, and I apologize. That's about the extent of what we know about what this individual is about. I suspect that in the coming days, both the media and investigators will begin to reveal a lot more information about who this person is. Tyler Robinson, 22 years of age, was still living with his parents, is what we were told. So, you know, it was interesting. Again, Governor Spencer Cox and the way that they coordinated this, I thought everybody kept their comments very concise, to the point. Didn't engage in a lot of speculation, didn't offer up a lot of salacious details, which I'm sure they're in possession of some, you know, very mindful. And the governor explained that under Utah law, they have 3 days to present a charging document in court, and he suspects that there will be more information that will be provided in that charging document, so we can anticipate to learn more probably Tuesday or Wednesday of next week with the filing of these documents in order to begin the process and get to a preliminary hearing as it relates to the criminal procedures that are laid out under state law of Utah. I'm also certain that next week we will begin to hear, if not over the weekend maybe, as they have more conversations between federal and state and local officials as to what the intentions of the federal government and the Department of Justice will be as it relates to charging Tyler Robinson with any potential federal charges. This is always a little bit of a friction point as to who's going to take the lead. This investigation is very much ongoing. As I said before, there is probably an incredibly strong desire to find out more about who Tyler Robinson is. Also, a strong desire to start digging deep on a digital footprint of this individual to see what he has been saying, posting, communicating to others leading up to this tragic event. So that will be interesting as well. There was no doubt once the videos and they were able to start pinning that and pulling that together, and they decided early on to release those videos. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, depending on what you know, what you don't know, you know, the strategy that you're going to deploy in the investigation. But once that went out, somebody was going to know this person. The videos became clearer and clearer. You were able to determine, you know, the facial structure and things of that nature, their gait of their walk, which is incredibly important and is another identifying characteristic, clothes, things of that nature. They were able to release that he appeared on the campus in one set of clothes. They believe that he changed that set of clothes on the roof put on the clothes that he had when he made his escape. And at some point in time after that, changed back into those other clothes. They did not talk at all about a search warrant for the parents' house, search warrant for the roommate. I'm sure that's all in the process of being done. They did not reveal whether or not about how much evidence they were able to secure. And it seems as though the father, as well as a minister, helped facilitate him turning himself in. So that's where we are. What's interesting is, you know, these folks keep referring to Charlie Kirk as a fascist. And it's interesting to me because obviously a lot of these college age folks, it would be nice if they just went to the definition and then look at the way that Charlie Kirk conducts himself in order to determine whether or not that's an appropriate label for Charlie Kirk. Because it's not. He's not a fascist. In fact, to the contrary, a lot of what he actually has offered up over the years is so far removed from being a fascist, other than you might say that he falls on the political far right of the spectrum. And it ends just about there. You know, and it's interesting when you're in the opposition, which fascism would never, you know, a fascist would never do, to express themselves, to talk about individual rights, to talk about other things such as that, that he's done on so many college campuses over the years, traveling to Cambridge, traveling to other universities in England, debating the best of the best of their students on their campuses about all of the contemporary issues that are out there. That's not the conduct of a fascist. The problem is that we're in this country, we are facing and having a real difficult time with disagreements. And if you're not intellectually ready for the game, human nature is you resort to your strength. And if your strength is you've armed yourself, or your strength is the physicality that you have, where you have a desire to go hands-on, or, you know, let's take this outside because you are getting rope-a-doped intellectually, this is what happens. And this is part of what's going on in this country right now. The interesting thing, and the frustrating thing, I believe, for a lot of the kids on college campuses, is when they tried to intellectually joust with Charlie Kirk. And remember, he was saying that universities, for the most part, for a lot of these students, is a ripoff. They're not getting the value proposition that they're paying for. When they stepped up to that mic, not ready, not able to articulate three sentences in a coherent way, they recognized, once they've embarrassed themselves, I believe, that he may be right. That we are not ready. And what little bit that we learn in school is not enough. Well, it was never going to be enough. And in defense of the universities, they'd never said that your educational experience starts and ends right there on the university campus. In fact, Charlie Kirk, to the contrary, said, every day is a learning day. Don't ever lose or miss that opportunity. It is absolutely a learning day, every day. And to be quite honest, it's one of the things that I love about what I'm doing today as a radio talk show host more than anything else. is my exposure to so much material. I wish I could synthesize it and remember it like Charlie Kirk. I'd love to watch him in action, because he mastered being able to synthesize material, put it into an argument, utilize it in a debate to make his points, and say to others, prove me wrong. Give me the data, give me the information, prove me wrong. And it was interesting because I think he really inspired a lot of students to step out of themselves and say, just going through the classes, going through the motions, getting the piece of paper at the end of 4 years, that's the bare minimum. That's not how you get the full impact of the educational experience at any two-year, four-year, continuing education class or otherwise. It requires work before, during, and after, in addition to what you are being provided. I think he made kids realize that the value proposition was not only the obligation of the university, but it was their obligation as well. They had a hard time accepting that reality. And Governor Spencer Cox said it well today. He said there were a lot of kids that loved Charlie Kirk. There are a lot of kids that hated Charlie Kirk for that very reason. A lot of folks have the inability to look themselves in the mirror every day critically and gain a better understanding about who they are, why they are, and what they will be. And what are their shortcomings? You never improve as a person if you don't engage in that all the time. Sometimes in different points of our life we do it better than other times, right? Let's be honest. You've heard me talk about emotional intelligence. We don't have any in this country. Very little. The ability to handle one's own emotions and the emotions of others. The byproduct of that inability is what we see happening on the streets every single solitary day. Every single solitary day. It's not about the violence. It should never be about that. How many, almost every day in this country, on a grammar school campus, a middle school campus, or a high school campus, we have fights breaking out, conflicts breaking out there, so much so that the call to the policing community across this country is becoming overbearing. We don't know how to resolve conflict. It's a zero-sum, all-or-nothing game. I don't know where that comes from. I wish I did. I don't have that answer. But I know one thing. Nothing, very little, of what we engage in life should ever be a zero-sum game. Ever. And the reason that I can say that with so much conviction is each and every one of us is imperfect in the center of no universe. Not a single one of us. Governor Spencer Cox said something else that was very interesting as well. He talked about this being an attack on the American experiment, that it's an attack on all of us, and political violence is different from all other types of violence, and he could not be more right. When we see the erosion of moral clarity in this country and what's going on and our inability to talk about it open and freely and to deal with these issues is really, really interesting. And bringing this back home to like the mayor's race and what's going on in the sheriff's race here and councilmanic races and otherwise, it's why I continue to say, listen very closely to what folks are saying. Think about the implications of what they're saying and what it'll ultimately mean. You know, part of the problem here is now that anyone that stands up for the rule of law, in the minds of a lot of folks in this country, that's synonymous with being a fascist. Because they believe that that's some kind of authoritarian political ideology. The rule of law. The rule of law has always been there. It was maybe not always a collection of laws in a set of books, but it existed by customs in what was accepted before there was a formalized system. And pick a place on the face of the earth. That's how it worked. That's how it worked. I'm not sure where we're getting these notions that the rule of law would lead anybody to believe is synonymous with fascism. If you don't like the law, you change it. You have the greatest veto power ever. You go to the ballot box. And you change it that way. But this live for the moment mentality that we have today, that we can't wait, we don't have patience. We're so impatient. It's got to happen now. It's got to happen for us right now. We can't afford to take the time to engage in the process, the formalization of laws, right? Now, we got to take matters into our own hands and try and change the course of society of individuals like Charlie Kirk, who is a leader of a movement. You know, interestingly, he's not a politician. He had no formal authority. None. Zero. He could not, the wave of a hand, the stroke of a pen, change the course of anything in this country. And yet, for some reason, he became a public enemy. Conversation sound familiar? Of course it does. It was the same comments that were made in the aftermath of the killing of Dr. Martin Luther King. Same curiosities, same questions, same wondering, same dilemmas. One would think that we would be more sophisticated in the way that we consume and digest and handle this information today. One would think that we would be more advanced educationally and have a greater and bigger and more empathetic understanding of how everything works, why. And it's not necessarily that you're a label, right? whether that would be xenophobe, racist, misogynistic, whatever. Pick the labels. We're so quick to run to them. In fact, our life today is nothing but a menu of labels. I think we're a lot more complex than that. The issues are a lot more complex than that. But you know what's not that complex is the moral clarity that we should have in this country. The rule of law. Love to hear from you, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We'll be right back. We'll go to the talk lines. Give us a shout. Love to hear what you're thinking. This is Newell on WWL.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. An arrest was made in the death of Charlie Kirk, Tyler Robinson, 22-year-old white male, Washington, Utah, southwest corner of Utah is where he lives, about 2.5 to 3 hours from the scene of the crime. Let's go to the talk lines. Donna, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel.
Good morning. Yes, good morning.
I'm calling really just that the thing that is the most chill.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Thing about this killer is how quote unquote normal he looks, you know, in the normal vernacular. He's a nice looking young man, clean cut, blah, blah, blah. But I'm afraid what has happened to our young people is that they have been radicalized by a lot of our institutions. Everything that looks somewhat benign has gone from mildly left to very left, whether it's the church, whether it's the school, our colleges, the media, and they equate words with violence. And I don't know how to unring this bell, that violence is violence. Words are words. We're a country of discourse where arguing is just fine. You just can't bring the weapon to the argument. You bring your mind and your heart and your words.
No, I agree. And this arc of radicalization that a lot of these kids are going through is, for me, and I'm sure for you as well, mystifying. I don't get it. I never had that experience in high school, college, law school. Didn't see it, didn't experience it. So it's something that is completely foreign to me. I have a real difficult time understanding what's happening there and why and what's the motivation. You know, what's interesting, I was looking at both Instagram and Twitter last night. Some of the most violent responses to Charlie Kirk's death has come from professors and teachers, which is chilling to me. In fact, they're getting fired like left and right. It's amazing that these are the folks that have our most prized things in our life, our children. And when I read these comments and the hate and the vile coming out of their mouth, I'm like, oh my God, is there any safe place for our children today? If this is who they're being exposed to, I wouldn't want it. And I'm sure you, and I'm sure most people wouldn't want it. It's crazy. Now, these are the folks that are helping establish and foster the moral compass of our children, right? And when you read this, it's like, oh no, 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 no. It can't be, but it is. We'll be right back, folks. We'll go back to the talk line. James is up when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go back to the talk lines. We have James. James, you're up. What say you?
Good morning, Newell. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. Today I want to kind of cheat and take advantage of making an announcement. Today is the birthday of a gentleman named Lawrence Brooks. Mr. Lawrence Brooks was a very ordinary citizen soldier who at the age of 106, the World War II Museum discovered him, and they started celebrating his birthday until he made it to 112. He passed away in 2022. Mr. Brooks, being over 100, most people asked him the same question, what's your secret to longevity? And Mr. Brooks' answer would almost always be, just be nice to people. He would follow it up sometimes with, hate is a waste, just be nice to each other. And that may or may not be directly dealing with Mr. Clark, but I think that we ought to take his message and kind of remember people like him, too. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, In fact, I remember the story. I think at one time, was he the oldest World War II vet still alive? Is that the case with
that's
him?
That's the gentleman. That, and when they would celebrate his birthday, there was these three ladies, I forgot their names, from the World War II. You should see how he would light up when they came to sing for him. So he was a man, that's for sure. But the sneaky point I'm trying to put in, I didn't agree with Mr. Kirk, but I admired him because he stood up for what he believed. So did Mr. Brooks. Mr. Brooks stood up for what he believed. Now, he grew up when people of his color could go and fight for this country and come back and be treated like crap. But he fought for the country. He believed in certain things, including us just being nice to each other. I just wanted to kind of...
You know, James, let me ask you something. I mean, you're a frequent caller, and I appreciate your point of view. I get a lot of texts that say that, you know, when we have this discussion about, like, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and more particularly equity, that if you are against that equity proposition where everybody is going to finish in the same place, and if not, you know, you put measures in place to make sure, and a lot of that is race-based, that if you oppose that, in your view, is that individual racist?
No, I'll kind of say he's, it could be racist, but I would say he's kind of skewed. Nobody wants to put in more work than somebody else and end up with the same unless it's pay. A lot of us want recognition. A lot of us want more power. A lot of us want more control. You don't want the exact same outcome for your efforts as everybody else. That's my opinion. Now, Mr. Kirk would talk about DEI also. I would disagree with him a lot because he, a lot of times, would always say black. And diversity means diversity in race, religion, sex, sexual orientation, but he would always kind of slide it toward black people, in my opinion. That would be my answer to that question.
Well, I mean, the reality is that it was really, you know, more about race than anything else. It really wasn't about religious affiliation for the most part, and it really wasn't about diversity of thought or anything else. It was really, really about, you know, the promotion of minorities, whatever that minority may be. But
you know, in there real quick, do what you suggested earlier. Go look up the word diversity.
I have it all defined here. I read it every day. You know, but you know.
Thank you.
I always like to go to the definition of the word first and start there. All right, we got to get to a break. They're yelling in my ear. It's okay. We're out of here. We'll be right back. Folks, when we return after the top of the hour news break, we'll visit with Emory McClendon, National Center for Public Policy Research. We'll talk about conservative activist Charlie Kirk and him being a kind of a larger than life leader of a movement. We'll get Emory's thoughts. And in the back half of the hour, Kate Swinburne, co-founder and president and CEO of Youth Force NOLA, connecting kids, local high school students with area companies to help pave the way for career readiness. They are celebrating their 10th anniversary, and we'll talk about their successes as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.